Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about something, kind of different. We're going to take a departure from our usual format of talking about nutrition, vitamins. We've even talked about diet. We talk a lot about psychology and lifestyle. I think this may be a first for the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, because today we're going to talk to a certified clinical hypnotist about the potential of hypnotism and hypnotherapy for modifying behaviors, for helping patients achieve relief from various types of conditions, but also to seal the deal on compliance, which is a big problem. You know, we can recommend vitamin supplements, special diets, but often there are serious obstacles to compliance, addictions, and various types of behavioral hurdles to getting well. So today, our guest is Jeffrey Rose. He's founder and director of the Advanced Hypnosis Center. He's a certified master hypnotist, and he also has an extensive background in nutrition. So he couples his work in the field of hypnotism with work endeavoring to improve the diets and lifestyles of his patients. He's one of my good colleagues here in New York City. We'll give you details on his center. And he uses an eclectic approach that includes hypnosis, cognitive behavioral therapy, and nutritional counseling, life coaching, to achieve results that match the unique needs of his clients. And he's been in the media. He's appeared on a wide variety of TV programs. He's written many articles for health magazines. And he's also host of Manhattan Neighborhood Network TV's Holistic Healing, a program on holistic lifestyle. So without further ado, here's Jeffrey Rose. Jeffrey, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Thanks for having me on, Ron.
My pleasure. I might add that his degree is in psychology from New York University. So well, tell us a little bit about, I think a lot of people have the notion that hypnotism is kind of like a parlor trick. You know, they've seen these amazing stage and nightclub acts where people can be transformed via hypnotism into quacking ducks. They can do, you know, absurd and funny things. But, you know, how does hypnotism have clinical utility?
Well, let me talk about what hypnosis is. Simply, hypnosis is just a narrowness of attention and a focus and absorption in one thing where we're not distracted. And in this state, we're more suggestible. Our subconscious mind is open to suggestions for new attitudes and new beliefs about ourselves, about the poor foods we may be eating, about alcohol, about cigarettes, for example. You could also think of hypnosis as the power that words and ideas have when we surround those words and ideas with our complete attention. So an example of that is when we go to a movie theater. At the beginning of the movie, we're very conscious, which is an awareness of the present. Our subconscious mind is not engaged yet. That's the feelings and emotions and creativity and stored memories and subconscious patterns, which are habits, some like eating too much sugar or eating processed foods or smoking cigarettes. When the film starts, though, that subconscious mind is not engaged. It's resting. You're very conscious. And let's say you see an actor early on, and you're distracted. You're thinking about when you saw that actor previously. Then you see something in the background like the Empire State Building. You might think, what a beautiful Art Deco building. I see this whenever I'm in New York. Still distracted. Film continues. You start getting more into the movie, more involved. And your subconscious starts getting involved, and your conscious starts to rest. You're no longer distracted by background scenes, and you go into hypnosis. And you may be in that state the entire time if you really like this film. You know, even like when the film is over and the credits are going up, the music's playing, you're still in that state. and eventually lights come up and you come back to a conscious state. So in that state, we're more receptive to positive suggestion.
Well, okay, so it suggests a it's almost like an artistic experience. The analogy that you gave is that it takes us away from our prosaic concerns, our itches, our impulses, our desires, our need to check our cell phone, our desire to think about the bills that need to be paid, and transports us into a different realm.
Mm-hmm. You know, you could also think of the power of the subconscious mind by breaking it down into like a two-part mind model. You have the conscious mind, you have the subconscious mind. So the subconscious mind is like the automatic servo mechanism that just operates our body and mind automatically. So that's where all the habits reside. That's where all life's programming and imprinting is taking place. Then you have the conscious mind is the seat of the willpower, which is a function of the conscious decision-making capability. That's where we usually have challenges. We think willpower is going to help us to eat healthier. And if we attempt to create any change, it has to be done on the level of the subconscious mind where programming and habits reside. So the hypnotic state is basically a tool that we use as a vehicle to communicate with the subconscious mind. So you could also think of the functions of the conscious mind as cognitive, logical decision-making, analyzing sensory input, you know, reasoning, criticizing, evaluating, judging, accepting or rejecting ideas or suggestions. And then think of the functions of the subconscious mind, which runs all bodily functions, the heartbeat, blood pressure, digestion, endocrine systems automatically, stores all the memory, automatic behavior, habits, also memory, and acts out automatically, so without question or hesitation. So any ideas, images, or thoughts that are allowed in, like akin to a computer executing program, are stored and utilized. And that's basically what I'm communicating to my clients, to help them to make the changes that they desire.
So how do you access this? Because, I mean, typically a lot of people have the idea that hypnosis involves a spinning wheel or staring into Bela Lugosi's eyes, you know, and inducing a trance-like state via like a Svengali-like spell. What actually transpires between you and a typical client in the office?
Okay. Well, typically I'm doing an induction that's tailored to them. And I know them before they even come in because I'm very thorough. I send out some confidential intake forms so I know about their lifestyle. I also send what's called the primary sensory mode test. It's like 28 questions there. It just reveals to me if they're more visual, auditory, or kinesthetic in their communication and how they store information. So although we have five senses, we also have olfactory and gustatory. Typically, we think and communicate and store information based on the impression of how things look to us, how they sound to us, how they feel to us. So visual people, which represent about 50% of the population, they're going to respond better to predicates like look and see and view and picturalize and visualize yourself losing the excess weight. Auditory people, which are rare, predicates like sound and harmony and tune and hear and vibe. Kinesthetic people, which are certainly more sensitive, people that are feeling the highs in life more, they're feeling the lows in life more, they're more affected, more intuitive, they respond better to predicates like feel and touch and grasp and grip and handle. So when they come in, I already know how they process, how they think. So I could tailor my communication to a way that's going to be more effective, essentially, for the subconscious mind. So that's one way of starting. And so I'll explain hypnosis to them, not unlike what I just explained to your audience right now, so they have a better understanding. Meanwhile, we're building rapport in the process. You know, I also really know a lot about them, as I said, before they come in, because I know about their health habits. I'm asking questions that most doctors don't ask. Most psychiatrists are not asking, unfortunately. So I want to know about their water intake. I want to know about their sleep. A key question I ask them, do you have trouble falling asleep, staying asleep? Do you wake up well rested, and do you use an alarm clock, which reveals a lot? I want to know about their sugar intake.
It reveals a lot about their ability to more readily enter a state of hypnosis, I think the word is that they're more inducible.
Actually, no. For those reasons, although sleep matters when I'm doing hypnosis with a client, because I want them to be well rested. You know, they might think that, you know, they're going to be sleeping in this process, and it's just the opposite. Their body will be sleeping, but their mind's hyper-focused. So I want them to be receptive. So I do fear that, you know, they're not going to be well-rested. And one of the reasons I'm so keen on promoting good sleep for every goal that the client wants to achieve is early on in my practice, over 20 years ago, I would be working with clients at 5:30, 6 o'clock, and they'd fall asleep. And I said, I can't let this happen. I tell people,
right. So instead, it'd be like, great, you know, I'm coming to the office for hypnosis, and, you know, it's like, excuse me, you end up shaking the client, like, wake up, because, I mean, we all too readily, you know, you close your eyes and boom, you know, you're gone.
Yeah. But when I ask about these things, it's more about having a holistic approach. So no matter what their goal is, they want to quit smoking, they want to lose weight, they have a fear of public speaking or some phobia, all these things matter. You know, if someone's, I use a metaphor, an artist working with a piece of clay can mold beautiful pieces of artwork and can make and mold marvelous sculpture. But if that clay is too wet, you don't get things to stick.
Okay.
So I say, I want to go beyond using the tool of hypnosis to help my clients change their behavior and improve. I want to see if there's anything in their life that might be inadvertently acting as an impediment. So those five things. We don't want to go through life dehydrated, sleep deficient, exercise deficient, nutrient deficient, or overindulging in relaxants or stimulants. So I go over all those things because I have a very holistic approach. I care. I'm thorough. And although I know how powerful the tool of hypnosis is, I'm not going to kid myself in thinking that's everything. You know, if someone has a fear of public speaking, they want to speak to a large group of people, and they're readily waking up with an alarm clock, getting a jolt of adrenaline, excess cortisol, then they're compensating by drinking 2 cups of coffee, adding 220 milligrams of a stimulant, and now they're about to get on a podium and speak. They're not going to be in a good state. So we only just
it would actually undermine your efforts to address the condition with hypnotherapy alone.
Exactly. So, you know, like, let's say a doctor, a typical medical doctor will diagnose and then there's two options, typically pharmaceutical or surgery. Okay, so they think everything is a pill or you have to do some surgery. A psychiatrist might think, well, everything is an archaeological dig if they're doing psychotherapy. A hypnotist and people that do, let's say, behavioral modification, you know, they're using that tool and they're thinking, well, that's the only thing we need to do. And I'm saying, yeah, that's important, of course. That's why they're coming to see me. They're coming to see a hypnotist and make those changes on a subconscious level to change attitudes and beliefs about themselves and about what they want to do in the future with themselves. But they have to be in a resourceful state going through life. And we know, certainly in New York, most people are not resourceful.
Right. We both practice in the belly of the beast here. Really, we probably have some of the most challenging patients in the world because we're not practicing in Santa Fe or in Marin County where people are are there to relax. We're seeing people fully in the fast lane and subject to tremendous stress.
Mm-hmm. That's
right.
True.
So typically, you cover the whole gamut of conditions, but what are some of the conditions that you typically see? And, you know, which conditions are most amenable to hypnosis? And are there certain conditions that are, you know, maybe not so amenable? I know that, you know, habits, food addiction, smoking, these would be high on your list, right?
Yes. I mean, those are what I'm known for. I'm at least in New York City, I'm kind of known as the go-to guy in New York to quit smoking and lose weight. That's a great modality to use for people. Weight loss, I'm helping them to change their attitudes and beliefs about themselves, about food. And so they're not eating for emotional reasons. They're getting fuller on smaller portions. They're not craving processed foods. They're motivated to be exercising regularly. You really want to get them to care. You know, especially in New York City, too often we're, you know, focused on wealth and not health. And as long as I can instill this is a priority, and then I'll utilize this. When it, you know, back to hypnosis, and, you know, I'll do a hypnotic induction. I'll guide them into trance, maybe a tropical island metaphor or something like that. But whatever metaphors I want to use in hypnosis while they're already deep in trance, I want to utilize, we use the term utilization, what the client brings. So if, for example, someone's religious, for example, then they already understand the idea of renunciate behavior. You know, giving up something will get something for you, whether it's keeping kosher, for example,
right.
Okay, or praying at a certain time or other, you know, let's say dietary habits. So they expect by you do something, you're going to get a positive outcome. Now, of course, that's only going to work for the narrow population of people that are religious. If I'm dealing with artists, I'm going to communicate in a different way. If I'm working with someone who's an investment banker, well, then I'm going to use metaphors that have to do with investing and taking care of yourself now.
Productivity and so on, and you know, maintaining your earning power and not undermining your health so that you'll curtail your career.
Yeah, and I'll speak as if they're talking to someone who's a financial advisor. I'm going to be using terms because that's how they process, that's how they think.
Right.
It could be a simple thing as we both know that you know, people tend to overeat, and people that are overweight and obese are overeating. And there's studies that show that a fast-eating person, if they were to eat slowly without any conscious goal of losing weight, would consume about 270 less calories a day. So people at work are trying to get as much in. And I think the difference between eating fast and eating slow is maybe you'll have 4 more minutes to do whatever you need to do. But since digestion requires so much energy in the body, it's going to be draining you if you eat very fast. You'll actually have more sustained energy throughout the day by being mindful and being slow. So you're investing in a simple thing. You're investing by eating slowly. You're investing in making the next hours, the next 3, 4, 5, 6 hours more productive.
Right. And I sometimes tell those people they need to diversify their portfolio in terms of creating a few slices of the pie chart for health, relaxation, exercise, diet, taking supplements, and so on. So, you know, that's, we tailor our approaches to the patients we see. But what's it actually like? Describe what an encounter might be with, you know, a patient. A client who comes in, you know, they sit there, you've gone through the formalities, they've filled out the questionnaire. It's like, we're getting down to business here. What actually transpires?
Right. All right. So I said I'd talk about hypnosis, and then I'll, depending on if they're a visual person, I said, for example, I could do a tropical island hypnotic induction. I'll put some ocean waves on the background there. They're laying back in a comfortable chair. It's not too bright. Obviously, their eyes are closed. And I'll just guide them into a state of hypnosis that they can do all by themselves because, you know, hypnosis is always self-hypnosis. I'm just acting as a guide. And when they're sufficiently in trance, and you can see that there's like a catalyst sleep, they're not moving at all, they're still, they're breathing at a nice pace, they're receptive at that point. And I'll maybe deepen the trance a little bit by maybe counting from 10 down to 1. And then I'll go right into scripts. We call them scripts in hypnosis. Now, if you're a very good hypnotist who's been working for many years, you're doing things intuitively. You're not really working from a script. Although you might be saying the same kind of things to every single client that's coming in to quit smoking or to moderate drinking alcohol or to lose weight. You know, there'll be certainly 60, 65% of what I'm going to say on a first session with a client is going to be the same. But then I'm really, and I'm in trance when I'm working too. I should say my eyes are typically closed and I have these script templates in my head, but I'm tailoring them to the individual based on what I feel just makes sense for them. So I'm actually visualizing and picturing and imagining that I'm actually going through their day. And, you know, the day when they're going to be drinking water the moment they wake up. They're going to be eating perhaps a piece of fruit first thing in the morning. They're going to exercise whenever they can. They're going to have some salads at lunch and dinner time, you know, and they're going to stay free of the processed foods. And I should actually say, I do preach what I practice. I practice what I preach. I mean, I haven't had any sugar since 1980, so it's like 34 years sugar-free. I haven't had any processed foods for 20 years. I basically maintain the paleo diet. Now, I don't actually have to encourage people to go on a paleo diet because that's not my objective. That's not their goal. But we all know that processed foods don't belong in the body, period. None of it does. It's acidic. You know, it's going to cause inflammation. Obviously, they're going to crave it more, these starches. And I want to get them, it's not sugar-free, what we say is virtually sugar-free. So maybe they have to have some exceptions. It's the birthday. And we say, fine. As long as you're back on track and you realize that, you know, you want to keep sugar at bay. You want to you want to keep alcohol.
So when they're in this state, first you induce a state of relaxation. You know, you're having them concentrate on their breathing. They're playing relaxed music. They're relaxing their muscles. And then you begin a series of suggestions, which you hope will embed in their subconscious, correct?
Mm-hmm. And the subconscious, since it's really getting feelings, I'm very passionate. I'm moving around. I'm like really getting into it and communicating in a very powerful way. So, you know, what makes a hypnotist really good is not that they know how to hypnotize anybody, because anyone could do that. It's what do you say to that person that's going to have impact.
Right. It has to be, you can be technically adept, but if you don't have the content, and you do certainly via your own personal experience, knowledge, and lifestyle to impart mm-hmm. to the patient, it's not going to stick. It'll just be a series of rote instructions like, I will not eat sugar, I will stay away from junk. You know, there might be some, like a formal recitation of rules that will be in a rote fashion, but won't really be imparted with any impact, correct?
And if they're a visual person, usually in closing that first weight loss session, which I should say I do about, it's an hour and 45 minutes. And I'll usually have them, I'll say to them, knowing that you're going to be exercising regularly, eating healthily, eating slowly, eating less, drinking more water, picture yourself the way you want to look. Visualize yourself. And then I'll say, picture yourself the way your face will look. Picture yourself the way your arms will look. Picture yourself the way your stomach will look. If it's a woman, I'll say, picture yourself the way your hips will look, and then picture yourself the way your legs will look. And then I'll add, as you picture yourself the way you want to look, that's the way you're going to be. You're very motivated to lose weight, very motivated to release weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a very strong motivation, and you're very motivated to exercise. And then I'll add other things. You have no desire for any processed foods. Maybe I'll do some reversion. If you were to eat any processed foods or sugar, you may feel very sick and very nauseous. I'll add.
What was the term you used? You used the term eversion?
Aversion?
Aversion. In other words, creating an internal feeling of whereby you create a negative feeling around this habit, which is usually so gratifying.
Mm-hmm. Like a disgust for that.
Yeah. So you might do that with cigarettes. You might say, well, the smell on your hands or the smell that, in the house, get them to focus on that as a negative reinforcer as opposed to the positive reinforcer of that first puff, delicious puff of the cigarette, first cigarette of the day when they open the pack. That's like a very powerful reinforcer for smokers.
Yeah, it's good to do both. And, in closing with the weight loss, I'll add, the less you eat, the happier you are. The less you eat, the more motivated you are to losing weight. The less you eat, the healthier you're going to be, and the better you look, and you like to look good. I'll add, the more you exercise, the happier you are. The more you exercise, the more motivated you are to continue losing weight. The more you exercise, the healthier you're going to be, and the better you look, and you like to look good. And then I'll just kind of close and reinforce things again, and they come out of trance. And before they actually even, I'll do like a convincer, which it could be as simple as your right hand will remain hypnotized until I say the word release. So they come out of trance, they open their eyes, they're moving a little bit, but the right hand's still sticking because the subconscious mind was programmed that until I say release, it's not going to move. And then I'll ask them, so are you going to be exercising regularly? They'll nod their head or say yes. Are you going to be eating healthier? Yes. Are you going to be drinking more water? Are you going to keep that alcohol in check? Yes. Then I'll add the word, then I'll just say release. Their right hand goes up, and it's like a powerful impression right there that it's like a commitment. It's like they're shaking hands on something. Uh-huh. They're committed to doing that.
Right. It's almost like I solemnly swear, put your hand on the Bible. I do solemnly swear the testimony that I'm about to give, et cetera, et cetera, which is, not hypnotic, but it's sort of it's a bodily imprint of an affirmation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when they leave the session, I'm going to email them some affirmations for a slender body. Things like nothing tastes as good as fit and healthy feels.
Mm-hmm.
And affirmations are very powerful. I mean, short of seeing a hypnotist, it's another good thing that, we ought to be saying to ourselves all the time. In fact, we're in a hypnotic state first thing in the morning. It's called hypnopompic, as well as when we drift off to sleep at night, it's called hypnagogic. That's a really great state to program ourselves with positive affirmations. And that's something that successful people intuitively do all the time. Great athletes, great leaders, great doctors, besides having talent, they just constantly program themselves with positive affirmations and positive self-talk and mentally rehearse positive outcomes. And with affirmations, it's a good idea to just speak these affirmations out loud, focus on the ideas and thoughts that they're expressing. Because when you really start, you find that you no longer hear your voice. You're able to pay attention to the thought you're expressing and let the thought just flow through you. Your mind won't drift much. And it's difficult to drift when you're speaking out loud and thinking and feeling and listening, and you're using more of your senses. Because basically the subconscious mind doesn't differentiate between a real experience and one that's vividly imagined within your mind. The subconscious mind accepts imagined images as being actually real. So what happens is, when reality and the imagined reality created by your affirmations are at odds, tension's created, and in an effort to resolve that tension and regain equilibrium, the subconscious mind then seeks out ways to lead you to act in a way that will turn the imagined reality of your affirmation into actual reality, which then resolves the conflict. So affirmations used with conviction, belief in the reality, as you're saying them, easily and naturally create positive change in your life. So it could be something as nothing tastes as good as fit and healthy feels, or I'm identifying myself as a strong, slender, healthy person. My inner mind knows what to do to keep my body slim and is doing it just the right way. And I have about 40 different affirmations I'll send to my clients for a slender body. I will also send them some weight loss articles that I've written for them within my practice. I'll send them some of my published articles, and I'll usually provide them 2, maybe 3 self-hypnosis audios for additional support. And I recommend a week and a half out. They come in for 1 hour reinforcement. And then I suggest anytime you want a booster in the future, I'm here for you for a 45-minute session. They're not in therapy. They don't need to come and see me over and over. In fact, my goal is to get the best success in as few sessions as possible. Then they end up referring me to more people. So it's where I'm getting my clients is from.
You don't want to create a dependency. You want to create freedom and success as quickly and fast results, which is, you know, we're results-oriented town. We're here in Manhattan, and people want to see transformation occur rapidly. Okay, so the website is ahcenter.com, and if you Google Jeffrey Rose, clinical hypnotist, you'll get there as well. This is a good point at which to pause because I have some more questions to ask you about hypnosis in the service of getting people healthier. That's what Jeffrey Rose's practice is all about. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and please join us for part two of today's podcast with Jeffrey Rose. This is Intelligent Medicine.